Hi, this is Jeff in Sachse, Texas, and just like Bob, I'm a tactical guy, and I like a tactical podcast.
Jeff, wait a minute. That's practical guy and practical podcast.
Oh, never mind.
This podcast is part of the Self-Defense Radio Network.
Hi folks, I'm Bob Main, and you are listening to another episode of the Handgun World Podcast. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop, and this is episode 381. I am very excited about this because I get a chance to talk to Paul Lathrop of the Polite Society Podcast. He's waiting patiently while I finish up this intro, and he's going to speak publicly for the very first time and let you guys know what happened to him, tell his story, and I'm very excited about it. So, Paul, are you there?
Yes, sir.
Well, first of all, Paul, thank you very much for coming on my show and telling your story for the first time publicly, and congratulations to you.
Yes, sir, thank you. Honestly, it's an honor. Bob, you and I have been friends for a long time, and when this whole thing happened, you and I had a conversation shortly after I was released from jail, and I said that I didn't want to tell the story on my own show the first time because I didn't want to be seen as profiting from it. And you stepped up and said, well, you would go ahead and do it on your show, and I thank you for that.
Well, and I thank you. For people that are not familiar with Paul, Paul's the owner and the primary host over at the Polite Society Podcast, also a podcast on the Self-Defense Radio Network. So you need to listen to that Polite Society Podcast. If you've been following Paul's story, then I think you're in for a real treat. Paul, go ahead and start. Tell people what happened.
Well, it was the Friday before Valentine's Day this past February. I was training a student. I drive truck for a living, for those who may not know. Have been driving for, this year is 14 years plus that I've been driving truck, and I've been training drivers for a very long time. So I was training a new driver. He was just about ready. This was his final trip. We were taking a run from Iowa to California and then grabbing something and coming back with it. We weren't sure what yet, but we were going down to California running as a team, meaning that both of us would do some driving. I was just kind of there as his backup in case he had questions. Well, we had gotten our load that Friday night and needed some fuel, and so we stopped at a truck stop just west of Omaha, Nebraska, to put fuel on. I did not need to use the restroom, and he was perfectly able to fuel the truck on his own, so I stayed in the bunk. I was going to have to drive in a little while, so I was going to lay back and relax and noodle around with the phone or the tablet or something and just kind of hang out while he did his responsibility, which is everything to do with the truck.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, when we pulled in between the fuel islands as you fuel trucks, and I'm sure you do have a lot of truck drivers that listen to you. We truck drivers tend to listen to a lot of podcasts.
Yes.
We pulled in between two trucks when we went to fuel, and my student fueled no problem. What you do as a truck driver once you fuel is you pull the truck forward, you park, you go in, you get your receipt. If you're going to get a cup of coffee or use a restroom, that's when you do it. And so that's what he did, and I just kind of hung out in the back of the truck. Well, he comes back, he's getting ready to go, and the truck that was on our right, now at this particular truck stop, you had to leave, you have to make a left turn, and go around the pumps and go back out the same driveway you came in. Well, the truck to the right of us pulled forward, started going around, and when his trailer was right dead in front of us, stopped.
He stopped?
He stopped dead.
Okay, right in front of you?
Right in front of us. There was enough, well, I'll get to that in a second, but, and his cab, as he was leaving, the back of his trailer was kind of in front of us, but of course the front of the truck was further along. The truck tractor trailer is 70 feet long. Tractor is farther along in the turn. We could see him get out of the driver's seat, or my student could. He said it to me, and I sat up, and what the heck? This other driver got out of the driver's seat and went to the bunk.
Got out of the driver's seat and went to your bunk?
No, went to his bunk.
Okay.
Got out of his driver's seat. Truck stopped dead. Blocking us in, there was a truck, again, to our left. This had been the guy on our right. And we couldn't go. There was obviously a problem. Well, the driver that was on our left seen what was going on. He started backing up so we would have room to try and make the left turn to get out of there. Had he just left, there would have been enough room, but I think he was even a little tight with the truck on his left side. So he started backing up. My student pulled forward a little bit too soon, wasn't able to clear, didn't have the room, so I told him, by then I'm standing up, I'm in between the driver and the passenger seat, just a little bit behind the driver's seat, because that from that vantage point, I can see both mirrors in the truck. That's where...
Yeah.
That's where the instructor usually tries to view a student from inside the truck when they back if they're not standing outside the truck. Well, Keith starts backing up, and the guy in the original, the guy that blocked us off, is now sitting in his driver's seat and waving out the window. And Keith gives him the number one salute. And this guy, as he's backing up, as Keith is backing up, gets out of the truck and starts walking toward our truck, waving his arms and screaming.
Now, do you have at this point, any reason why he was doing this?
No.
Okay.
It came out and he said, we'll get to that in a bit. I do know what he told the police.
Okay. All right. So he comes out of his truck, starts waving his arms, coming towards you.
Coming towards the driver's side of my truck. Yeah. Keith stops the truck, hits the brakes, because he doesn't want what he was thinking is, the guy's going to fake an injury. And so he stops the truck, sets the brakes, and sits there. I said, Keith, lock your door. He did. It was the old style lock. You got to move your arm over and push the button down. It doesn't have electric locks.
Yeah.
And the guy is screaming, I'm not moving. You're not moving. And walking towards the truck. Now, I am a concealed carry permit holder. Everybody should know that who has listened to you and me. My gun is in the desk drawer, unloaded. That's when I'm laying down. I don't keep a loaded gun on me laying down. My Glock 22 is sitting in the desk drawer, right beside me, and as this guy's walking up, I open the desk drawer and lift the lid. My hand is right there, but I'm not on the gun yet. The gun's not in my hand.
Okay.
As he's coming closer, I yell, stop! And he keeps walking, and he starts reaching up for the mirror. He's going to climb up and try and get in the truck.
Now, was the window open?
Yep, window's open.
Okay, so he's going to try and get into the truck.
Right. He's going to try and reach my student Keith. Well, as he's grabbing towards the mirror, with my best command voice and Bob, you've heard me. You know I can get loud.
Yes.
I said, "Dude, I've got a gun." Trying to stop this before I actually have to use it.
So you say to him, "Dude, I have a gun," and you use a command voice, and obviously he does not appear like he's going to stop doing what he's doing, right?
Well, he does. When I say that, he stops dead.
Okay.
He backs up and he tells me, and I'm going to have to paraphrase here. He says, "You tell me that, I'm not going bleep for nowhere."
Okay.
He turns around and he gets in his truck. All right. Well, that's done. I have Keith back up some. Keith is my student.
Right.
And we do extended maneuvering, and we're able to go around behind him, turn to the right, and make a path through the parking area, the truck stop, and come back, and we're able to work our way around him. And by this time, the guy on our left had already gone. So it's just this guy sitting there.
Now, did he seem agitated or angry, like he wanted to whoop somebody's butt?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, and he was okay. Coming for he was my theory is he was angry at Keith for giving him the one-finger salute.
You know? Maybe so.
Anyway, as we start trying to go around him and leave, the guy nails the throttle, turns left to try and run his trailer into our tractor. Keith had anticipated that, and he turned left as well, hit the brakes, and the guy proceeds to exit. Or go towards the exit.
Okay.
Keith says to me, I think during that tight turn we were getting repositioned, I might have dropped the airline. You mind if I go check? Yeah, dude, go check. That's cool. That's being a responsible driver. You don't want to go on the... There are two airlines for trucks, the emergency and the service. The emergency goes and you stop right now. The service goes and you can roll down the road just fine. Your trailer doesn't have any brakes.
Oh, okay.
So he went to check the service line. It was properly connected. Brakes were good. Okay, it's time to leave. So we all leave. This guy, too, had left.
Okay.
About 30 minutes later, we're driving down the road, and you can guess what happens. Nebraska State Patrol pulls us over. And do you have a gun in the truck? And I'm not going to lie, and Nebraska's has a duty to inform anyway.
So yes. This is, okay, so a state trooper in Nebraska in the Omaha area, right?
No, actually, we were almost to Lincoln.
You're almost to Lincoln. He pulls you over and he asks you what?
Do you have a gun in the truck?
Is that the first thing he asked you?
Mm-hmm. And I reply, yes, I do. And he says, well, do you know what this is about? And I said, I might have an idea. I said, I screamed to the guy. Did he was getting ready to beat up my student. Well, there was two troopers there. They separated me and my student, and they interviewed us. And then they swapped, and the guy that was interviewing me to start with went and interviewed Keith, and the guy that was interviewing Keith came and interviewed me. And then they swapped again. The guy that originally interviewed me was talking with somebody, I believe it was a supervisor, on a telephone, not on the police radio.
Okay.
And he's telling his supervisor, look, these guys' stories match. He said, and then the conversation went on. I don't remember exactly what was said. I mean, after all, it's been 6 months ago. But, the trooper eventually goes to me, let's get this straightened out. Let's go ahead and run you two back there. We'll talk with this other driver. We'll talk with the deputies in Sarpy County. Let's get this straightened out, and you guys can go on. All right. So he drives us back to where this other driver was, about 20 miles back. And the deputies come up to the side of the car. I am in the front seat. My student is in the back. And the trooper opens the door, said the deputies would like to talk to you. The first words out of the deputy's mouth were, sir, please turn around and put your hands behind your back. They weren't looking to have a conversation with me. They weren't looking to find out what happened. They arrested me right off the bat.
For what reason?
The charges, when I was finally told the charges, when I was booked into the Sarpy County Jail, was terroristic threat and commission of a felony with a firearm.
Now, wait a minute. You weren't told these charges until you got to the jail.
That's right.
So as the deputy was arresting you, he didn't tell you what you were being charged with?
No, he did not.
Isn't there a problem with that?
I do not know.
Okay. some people listening may chime in, but okay, go ahead. So they charge you with terroristic threats,
mm-hmm. which is and, a five year felony.
Okay, and what was the other charge?
Commission of a felony with a firearm, which is a 50-year felony.
Now, what did this other trucker that filed the charges, what did he tell the police?
What he had told the deputy from Sarpy County, and this came out in court, the deputy testified to this in the preliminary hearing, which was held in March. The deputy testified that this person told him and that I had been out of the truck and waving a large revolver in his face, screaming at him, "Do you want to die tonight?"
That's what he told the deputy.
Right.
That you had a revolver, not a Glock.
Right.
And that you had gotten out of the truck waving it.
At his face, yes, waving it around.
And asking if he wanted to die.
Yes. Yes, that is what was told to the deputy. Now, let me bring up one more thing. This particular truck stop was a Flying J truck stop.
Yeah.
All Flying J truck stops have video on the pumps.
They all have video on the pumps. So this whole thing was videoed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's hold that thought for a minute. This thing is all videoed. So the deputy just believes this guy's word without even asking you any questions or investigating any further?
Yes.
He takes his word that what he said is absolutely true and arrests you.
Right.
Why do you think that happened?
Let me, I don't know specifically why it happened. I have a suspicion.
Yeah.
And that is that Sarpy County, from my attorney, had told me when I had my first meeting with him, that Sarpy County is, including Lincoln, the most anti-gun county in the state. That the prosecutor there will prosecute every single gun case he can, including against a former chief of police of one town, my attorney successfully defended, and there's a long story behind that. We may get into it later, or we may not. But this prosecutor in Sarpy County loves going after the 50-year commission of a firearm with a felony. And because terroristic threats in Nebraska can be charged as a felony, it's 55 years they can go after.
Yeah, now hold your thoughts here for a second, Paul. I want all listeners listening to this to understand this is the kind of crap that can happen even in supposed gun-friendly states like Nebraska or anywhere else. This is the kind of crap that can happen if you have a liberal anti-gun prosecutor that has it out for gun owners.
Yeah, very much so.
Okay, so it's on video. So he basically lied to the deputy saying that you got out of the car or you got out of the truck with a gun and a revolver. So he didn't even know what kind of a gun it was because he never saw the stupid gun. So he lied to the deputy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and that's on videotape.
Yeah, the entire thing is on videotape, yeah.
Okay, so keep going.
So I'm booked. They give me one phone call. I am so grateful that they gave me, I'd left my cell phone in the truck. I didn't think I was going to get arrested. I left my cell phone in the truck. The only thing I grabbed that I didn't have when the police pulled us over, I grabbed my glasses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I'm nearly blind without them. So, at any rate, we get to the jail. They give me my one phone call. Thankfully, they gave me my debit cards out of my wallet so I could charge the call because my wife and I only have cell phones. We don't have a landline. I couldn't make a collect call.
Yeah.
I called Susan, had the worst conversation you'd ever want to have in your life. Who wants to call their wife or get a call from their wife or their husband or their wife? Who wants that conversation? Honey, I'm in jail. I'm charged with a felony.
Yeah, nobody wants that.
And then I'm told, this is Friday night, I'm told you will not be able to appear before a judge. We do bail hearings once a week on Wednesday.
Wow.
So I'm going to have to spend 4.5 days in jail before I can see the judge.
Wow, and that's what you had to do, right?
Yeah, I spent 4.5 days in jail. Now, I got to tell you, I think I mentioned this on my show. When I called Susan, being arrested, Bob, is horrifying. It's embarrassing. Yeah. It's humiliating.
Yeah.
The emotions that run through your mind are all negative and all extremely powerful.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure they are.
That first night, I didn't know. I knew I didn't do anything wrong. But in what was happening, I didn't know whether there would ever be another episode of the Polite Society podcast. I didn't know. What I had known is that for 4 years, I built a wonderful, beautiful show.
Yeah.
I put my heart into it. And I didn't want people to think of me as a criminal. So I told Susan, don't tell anybody.
Okay.
I told Susan, just, you know, we'll figure it out, sweetheart. But I don't want anybody to know. My beautiful wife, Bob, my wonderful, loving, caring wife, knew I was making a mistake. Mm-hmm. And she reached out and got Frank Fiammingo, the former president of the New Jersey Second Amendment Society, and a whole lot of other friends involved.
Yep.
And some fundraising was started, and they raised enough money to hire an attorney and to get me bailed out on that Wednesday. And I got to tell you, Bob, man, we have got the most amazing friends, and our community is such wonderful people.
Yeah, they are. They are. I participated in that fundraising and also helped Susan spread the word to get people to contribute. And I was surprised. I was following the whole thing. You know, every couple of hours I would look in on the website and I would just watch the dollar amount rise and rise and rise mm-hmm. and rise. It was pretty cool to see.
Yeah, it was. We had a goal of 15,000. We didn't get there. But we got enough that with some personal loans I took out that I was able to get the attorney paid for. And we were able to get me out of jail. And just the whole thing was humbling in that respect. I talked to a whole bunch of people, and I want to single out a couple people if I could, Bob. Larry Pikarski in Indiana and his wife Stacy.
Mm-hmm.
They're firearms trainers. And they asked Susan if she would mind if they were going to be holding a Utah concealed carry permit class. And they wanted to take the proceeds from that class, and they wanted to buy Susan and I memberships to the ACLDN, the Armed Citizens Legal Defense Network. Susan said that would be fine, that we would appreciate that. And Marty Hayes then got in touch and called Susan and told her we cannot help with the money.
Okay, let me interject here. Let's let people know you were not a member at the time of the Armed Citizens Legal Defense Network, right?
On that Friday, I was not a member.
Right. That's why Marty said that they couldn't help.
Right. But what they did was amazing. They did everything they could except give me money. And, oh, by the way, Marty gave me money out of his own pocket, too.
Amen. Awesome. That's awesome.
They connected me with my attorney, James Davis, out of Omaha. That's the attorney that the ACLDN recommended.
Okay.
And through the fundraising, through some loans from friends, I was able to raise the $10,000 it took as the first payment to get him working on the case.
$10,000 to get Mr. Davis working on the case.
Right. The guy's not cheap, but there's a reason he's not cheap.
Yeah, he's good.
Yes, sir.
And that's what you want. That's what you want if you're in this situation.
Really, I mean, you're quite literally in a situation like this. Your life is on the line. Do you really want somebody just out of law school in the public defender's office?
Probably not.
Who may be okay, but maybe not. And who deals with somebody, let's face it, the public defenders, 90%, probably north of 90% of the people they deal with are guilty of the crimes they're charged with.
That's right.
Mr. Davis doesn't take cases generally that he doesn't believe he can win, that he doesn't believe that he's honestly defending an innocent person.
Good.
And that's a huge difference, having somebody on your side who says, this is different word for baloney. And so he really got to work. He went with me to the preliminary hearing, and there was a hearing. The very first hearing was the hearing to see if there was enough evidence to send it to trial. And in those hearings, a hearsay is allowed. This is where I find out what the person who made the complaint said. Hearsay is allowed in those hearings. So the deputy sheriff testified as to what he was told by this guy.
Okay.
And so they found through that hearsay evidence there was enough to send it to trial. Hearsay is not allowed in trial.
But it's enough to send it to trial.
Right. Right. It's a much, much, much lower bar to send it to trial than to actually convict.
Okay.
So, to kind of make a long story short, my attorney has been working back channels and trying to get the thing dismissed and trying to get the thing to go away. And I, as we talk on Wednesday night, or on Tuesday night, I'm sorry, as we talk on Tuesday night, I cannot say for sure. I can only say that I suspect what has happened. And that is this. The entire case for the state relies on the testimony of the person that brought the complaint.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And they can't get him to come back to testify. And that's why the charges were dropped.
Yeah, they could not get him to come back and testify, and that's why they dropped the charges. And why is it that you think they couldn't get him to go ahead and speculate. Why don't you think they could get him to show up?
Because my attorney was going to show a videotape.
Was going to show the videotape of everything that happened.
From the pumps, yes, sir.
So he subpoenaed the tape and got it.
Yes, sir.
Uh-huh. And so basically that would have shown the plaintiff as an outright liar.
Yes, sir.
And that would be perjury, would it not?
It certainly would.
It probably would be some other crimes as well.
Yep. So, yesterday, my attorney called me and said the charges have been totally dropped. It is done.
It is done. All right. Well, so the guy didn't show up. So he knew, the guy knew he filed very, very frivolous charges.
False, yes.
Yeah, false.
Not frivolous, because frivolous means meaningless. These charges had meaning. I would have went to prison if convicted for 55 years.
Yeah, okay. So let me change that. He knew he filed false charges.
Right.
And he also probably knew that it was on videotape.
Most likely he did, yes.
Or he was at least probably advised by his attorney that it was on videotape.
One would think that if he had an attorney. Now, the state's attorney does not work for the defendant. The state's attorney works for the state.
And that's important for people to understand here. That's important for people to understand here, that the state's attorney works obviously for the state, which is why they're called that. So basically, you got somebody, and you were talking about it earlier, somebody at the county or at the state is wanting this to move forward. Somebody wants to hang this around your neck.
Yep.
So you basically fell prey at first to overzealous anti-gun sleazeballs.
Yes.
And I'm going to call them that. I'm going to call them sleazeballs because the facts of your case prove that this was totally bogus.
Yes, absolutely.
And somebody that wants to destroy your life and try to put you in prison for 55 years over bogus charges because it involved a firearm, I'm outraged.
You're not the only one.
I'm outraged. I mean, this stuff shouldn't happen in America, but people need to understand that it does. It does. And I guess, Paul, this is why we and this is I don't profit from what I'm about to say. I don't profit. I'll say that again. I do not profit from what I'm about to say right here. But this is why you need to have a membership to places and organizations like the Armed Citizens Legal Defense Network, U.S. Law Shield, USCCA. Pick one. Become a member.
If I could, can I go off on that for a couple minutes?
Go off on it, sure.
I do have a preference myself. I am a member now and will be for the rest of my life of ACLDN.
I am too.
I am not a paid spokesperson.
I'm not either, and I'm a member too.
My story went really big in the Second Amendment community.
Yes, it sure did.
Marty Hayes is the only person that reached out to me. Marty Hayes is the only the ACLDN, I'm not going to say Marty Hayes, but the ACLDN has offered tremendous help throughout. Marty told me, I don't care if it's 2 o'clock in the morning where I'm at. If you need help, call.
That's awesome. That is awesome. Now, didn't Mass Ayoub get involved too?
He did. I am, as you are, I'm a graduate of the Mass Ayoub Group Mag 40 class. And before I was out of jail, he had called Susan. I do not know how he got her phone number. I suspect that may have been through Chaz Murray. But, he had called Susan and he asked, you know, that he be the first call that I made when I left jail. He wasn't. He was the second. I had to call my boss. And now, let me add this. I have got a totally amazing employer.
Yeah.
My boss told me that he didn't believe a word of what was accused, and that as long as I'm able to drive, I have a job for life.
That's awesome. That is awesome, man. It's really good to hear that kind of support. That's great.
But anyway, yeah, I called Mass. He was the second person I called when I got out, and ACLDN was second, or is third, I'm sorry, and then Kathy Jackson. Kathy is a five, for those of you who may not know, and I can't believe you don't, but Kathy is a renowned firearms trainer. She is probably the premier female firearms trainer, and I would put her, honestly, on national level trainers, I would put her only behind Masada Yub. And in many ways, she does better than Mass, having taken both classes.
Mm-hmm.
But I made a lot of phone calls, and God, the support, the encouragement, we got your back, man, that I got back from the people inside the community and listeners and people who just, you know, I trust Bob Main, and he said you needed money, and so here's a donation. I trust, you know, Masada Yub. He said you need a donation. Here's a donation. The community, just the support overwhelmed me.
Yeah. Well, and you had a lot of good support. That's the kind of people we are. That's the kind of people that Second Amendment people are. You know, regardless of the jack wagons in the media and the anti-gun politicians, regardless of what they say, we're not like they say we are. We're salt of the earth, good people, and we have each other's back.
Absolutely. I would like to go back to ACLDN. Through this whole process, from the middle of February till the middle of August, despite the, I think it was almost $9,000 in donations, despite that, I personally, between attorney's fees, bail, lost wages, and travel expenses, because I have to go back to Omaha whenever there's a court date, and get a room and all that good stuff, I'm out tens of thousands of dollars.
Yes, that's right.
If I would have been a member of ACLDN, I wouldn't be out a penny.
That's right.
They immediately come up with a $10,000 retainer, which, oh, by the way, is what was charged. They immediately come up with up to $10,000 for bail. Mm-hmm. And mine was only $2,500. I was able to talk. I can, my attorney, I had not actually paid him, so he didn't show up. But, at the bail hearing, the bail hearing is when I knew I was gold. I was not going to be convicted, because when the prosecutor said what was stated, I knew it was all lies. But at any rate, they stated what was supposedly done. And I stood up and I was standing, and I said to the judge, "Your Honor, may I say something?" He said, "I'd rather you don't talk about the case." I said, "I understand." I said, "Your Honor, I've worked for the same man for 15 years. I live in this area. I live in Sioux Falls. I live 200 miles away. I'm not from Texas. I'm not from Florida. I'm here. I'm 3 hours away. I'm not a flight risk, Your Honor. I will be here if you grant me bail." And the bail could have been up to $250,000. He charged $25,000.
Wow.
Of which I only had to pay 10% to get out of jail.
Yeah, right. So you got out of jail for $2,500 on top of the $10,000 retainer that had to go to your attorney.
Right. Yeah, it was $12,500 to get out of jail and get my attorney started working.
You see, and I want listeners to understand, this is, you know, it can cost you so much money. And you're not even talking right now about your lost wages and all your expenses and everything else. You're talking about just the attorney retainer and the bail money.
Right, right. I would like each of your listeners just to, do you have a balance in your checking account? Can you write a check right now for $12,500? That's just using, again, the only thing I did was use my voice, and I was arrested.
Yeah.
You come up with $12,500 right now? Sorry for banging the desk and my microphone at a couple.
That's okay, though. That's all right. Great
that,
point.
That, if you can't, it is, I want to say it's $125 for a family membership to ACLDN.
$125 per year.
For the first year. The second year, I think, is, and renewals are $90.
Yeah.
The reason the first year is more expensive is because they send you amazing DVDs for training. They send you a recent Masada U book. Just the DVDs are worth the price of admission. But at any rate, you know, if you own a gun and you're listening, I prefer ACLDN. But like Bob said, there's Texas Law Shield. There's Second Call Defense, I know, does this. USCCA, I know, has a program. You need to belong to somebody. and do your research. Don't go to somebody where, well, we'll reimburse you. Go to somebody where they'll say, we're going to be there to bail you out, and we're going to pay your attorney.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Don't go for a reimbursal system. Go for somebody, like you said, Armed Citizens Legal Defense Network and others that are out there that are going to go ahead and put up the money for your attorney and your bail. That's right. That's right. This the kind of help you got from Armed Citizens Legal Defense Network is just incredible. And also, and I'll go ahead and I'll say this, here's another reason why you want to go to a MAG 40 course so that you can get assistance from Masad Ayoub as well.
Yeah. Mass told me to inform my lawyer that he would be willing and anxious to testify for me should the need arise. And I've been getting text messages from Gail Pepin from time to time, just asking how things are going, making sure I'm okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's awesome.
Just, you know, Mass before, and this is all before I was set to host a MAG 40, but it had not happened yet.
Mm-hmm.
But Gail and Mass, while I was in jail, were checking in with Susan to make sure she was okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good.
Yeah, it's just the thing I am the most grateful for is the support for Susan. We have been together for a very, very long time, and Susan handles things very well, but she was feeling overwhelmed, and the outpouring from the community really, really helped. And unfortunately, as we're recording this, she has to be at work at 3 o'clock in the morning, so she went to bed already, right? I had to have her in and talking about it as well. But
no, I understand. I understand that. Paul, I'm dying to ask you a question. This might put you on the spot, and if there's some of it you don't want to talk about, you certainly don't have to. I'll give you an out, but what do you think you could have done differently?
Thank you for asking. The one thing I wish I would have done differently, and Mass teaches this in the MAG 40, and Kathy Jackson talks about it. You got to win the race to the phone. You got to be the first person to call 911. If during that conversation, during that confrontation, I shouldn't say conversation because it wasn't, during that confrontation, it had registered, dude, you, this guy is off his rocker. There could be an issue. I should have called 911, and I should have done it standing there while he was still at the window. I should have been dialing 911 on my phone.
That's right.
That was my mistake.
Yeah, you should have been calling 911 while he was standing next to your truck, and then right then and there, you'd have been the victim.
Yes.
Instead, he won the race. He called 911, and he played himself the victim.
Exactly. Exactly.
Now, Paul, do you think that you should have maybe not said you had a gun?
I don't know. I've thought about that a lot. I have. I've thought about it a whole lot. It got him to stop, and I didn't have to load and present my gun.
But that's true. It did get him to stop.
It ended the physical confrontation. So in that, with, you know, and again, use of a loud command voice, that was all the force I had to use. And so I'm not really ready to say, me saying, dude, I've got a gun, was a bad thing. What I should have been doing is dialing 911 as I was saying it, or maybe even before I said it.
Yeah. Now, you just said something about it would have ended the physical confrontation. Did the confrontation actually get physical, or was it just threatening physical activity?
It was threatening physical at the time.
Okay.
He, He's reaching for a mirror and putting his leg up to go up on the steps to the truck to start trying to get at my student through the window.
Uh-huh, yeah, okay. So that's some pretty aggressive gestures there.
Yeah.
And, of course, that was on tape.
Yep.
So had this gone to trial, everything would have – it would have showed him getting – you know, reaching for the mirror and trying to get into the truck, and it would have showed him being belligerent.
Right. It wouldn't have showed me because I was inside the truck. It would have showed there was nobody outside the truck with him.
Waving a revolver in his face.
Exactly. I don't know about you, Bob, but I don't even think I've seen rumors about Glock making a revolver.
I don't know. You never know. That could be the next SHOT Show introduction is the Glock revolver.
I'm not going to hold my breath for that one.
You know, Paul, I want to say thank you very much for sharing this. It takes a lot of guts for you to do this, to share this publicly and to tell people. It takes a lot of guts. And I got to compliment you. You handled this with an incredible amount of grace, an incredible amount of humility, but you stayed strong. You got back in the game, and what I'm saying about that, what I mean by that is you got back to doing podcasting. You didn't seem to let it bother you much. I know it probably did.
Oh,
but
it did.
But you didn't let people see you sweat.
You know, I got to say, the number one reason is my wife.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Susan gave me the strength. And I'm an extremely blessed man to have her as a wife. She is both smarter and stronger than I am in many ways.
Well, behind every good man is a whole lot better woman.
Amen. Amen to that.
And, you know, plus you had a tremendous amount of support, like you said earlier, from your friends and you really were your extended family.
Very much so, in a very real way. One more thing I want to say, and,
go for it.
And I apologize if I get a little overly emotional, but my biggest fear sitting that first night in jail, and before we go away, I do want to talk a little bit about jail too, but
yeah, go ahead.
But my biggest fear that first night in jail was, and it's a stupid fear, but I had built so much working to try and paint all of us as good people. We that hold concealed carry permits, who are a little more law-abiding, by and large, if you look at statistics, than any other segment of the population. I was afraid people were going to see that I had been charged and think that I was a charlatan and turn and walk away.
And I can understand why you were thinking that, because, you know, people who didn't know you personally may think that.
Yeah. But I got to say, I think it actually went the other way. Were there a few people? Yes. And I am sorry to say people in my own family have turned their backs.
Yeah, that's sad. Well, we knew you were not a charlatan. We knew you were not that kind of a person. And that's why you saw the huge, massive assistance and the massive amount of support and money and emotional support and everything. It's why you saw it. We knew better.
Yeah. Well, you know, when I started my show, and I want to say lucky. Maybe I'm blessed is a better word to have the show.
Mm-hmm. Amen.
When I started it, my big goal, I started my show in February of 2012. That was early in the election cycle when it was Romney versus Obama. My big goal is I wanted to change the world. I figured if I put my voice out there with reason, I could change enough minds that I could shift an election. Well, of course, we know how that went.
Yeah.
But I started the show, and I wanted to be me. My real name is Paul Lathrop, but I say my real name on the air. I wanted to open my life and my everything up so that people would see me as a regular guy, as part of them. I start off every show of the Polite Society podcast with what we call the personal news segment, the open and personal news segment.
Yeah.
And the reason I do that is it was designed from the very beginning. I want people to see what my life is. I want people to see that I go through struggles just like they do.
Right.
And I can still fight for our rights. And I think that helped me because a lot of people talk to me, even though they've never met me, they talk to me like they've known me for a long time.
Sure.
And I think that helped with, I know this guy. He's on my car, in my car, riding with me to work every week. You know?
That's right. Yeah.
You know, we do know you, and we did know you, and we still do, and we always will. And again, that's why I say you received so much support. I knew this wasn't going to stand. I didn't know how much you were going to have to go through. That's what I was worried about. I knew it wasn't going to stand, but what I was more worried about was what you were going to have to go through to clear your name.
Right. I do want to change directions here a little bit. I do want to talk about jail, if I could.
Talk about jail.
Well, let's start with getting arrested. The deputy apparently had a really tough time with a cooperative person putting handcuffs on him, but they cuffed my hands behind my back after several tries, and I was trying to help the guy, and put me in the tiniest, hardest little backseat. This is an SUV that they transported me from where they picked me up to the jail in. You would think SUV, it's got room in the back seat. No, it really doesn't. My legs were, I had to sit with my hands behind my back. That, of course, moved my backside closer to the front of the seat. I had to spread my legs so that I had, I wasn't crushing either my hands or my knees against the seat in front of me.
Yeah.
And everything was hard. I'm having a brain fart. The plastic that's clear but bulletproof, Lexan.
Yeah.
And they transported me to the jail. I got my one phone call, and then this all happened Friday night. Starting, we were fueling at about 9. They actually put me in jail right about 11, and they strip searched me. That's incredibly humiliating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, I'm a truck driver. I don't have the physique I had when I was in my 20s. But they strip searched me. They fingerprinted me and took mug shots. And then they went to, they took me to a hallway, and they said, grab one pillow, or not pillow, one package there, and you're going to walk over here, and you're going to grab one mattress, and you're going to walk over here, and you're going to grab one you got a package with your personal care stuff. You Ooh. Got a mattress and you got a blanket. You did not get a pillow. They took me to a room where the jail cell that I was in was a very large, almost cross between a dormitory and an arena.
Mm-hmm.
All the beds were up on the second level, and there was a stairway to get to the second level. I carried my stuff up. They said, just find an empty bed and get in it. Well, all the beds were bunk beds. And the only empty bunk beds were on top. I'm a 47-year-old, I had my birthday, so I was a 47-year-old truck driver who had not done a whole lot of physical activity in the last 14 years. I had to get my fat behind on the top bunk. This was a little after midnight, and so most of the people were laying down. There were some people down on the main floor that were playing cards and laughing and hollering and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So I get my stuff and I go up, and pardon me, I didn't mean to bang the microphone there. I go up and try and make some semblance of a bed, and mattresses, as you can believe, are extremely thin and not very supportive, and the bunk beds are just a straight metal cot.
Wow.
So no pillow. You had a choice of either being cold because you don't have a blanket because you're using a blanket for a pillow, or your neck is going to really hurt because you're using the blanket as a blanket. And by the way, the blankets were about 5 foot. I'm a 6 foot guy.
Mm.
Next day, they come around and they do a medical intake. They want to know about everything that's going on with me. I told them I'm a diabetic. I am. I'm on 3 separate medications. Could I remember them? Not to save my life. I remembered one. Can you call my wife? Because she knows, she packs my meds every week. She knows what I take. We'll call your pharmacy. Which one?
Yeah.
Because there are 2 different pharmacies I use. I'm on a program for one of my medications, and it comes from a pharmacy in Indiana. It's through my health insurance. It's a special program they've got going for me to keep me driving and making money instead of taking insulin and losing my trucking job.
Right.
They call the pharmacy in Sioux Falls, and I get one med, metformin. Mm-hmm. They don't call my doctor. They don't call my wife. They call one pharmacy. So of the 3 diabetes medications that I normally take for the 4.5 days I'm in jail, I get one of them. And they're checking my sugars twice a day. And my sugars, believe it or not, start rising.
No kidding.
To the point where they're starting to get dangerous. I refuse. They tried to put me on insulin. I said, you're not going to ruin my driving career. Once you go on insulin, my understanding, and I'm not a doctor, I don't play one on TV. Once you go on insulin, it's incredibly hard to get off of it. Your kidney just stops producing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so the other issue is with getting medications is that you are called at 5:30 in the morning. Now, when these kids, and they're, I'm not going to kid you, man, they are kids. They're 18 to 25-year-old, most of them that were in jail. They don't go to bed at 10 p.m.
Yeah, nope.
And so they're up and making noise, and it's hard as hell to get to sleep. 2-3 o'clock in the morning, they finally pipe down and go to sleep. At that point, at 5:30 a.m., they open the door, and one person, a nurse, without a command voice, says, Lathrop.
Says what?
Lathrop.
Oh, Lathrop, okay.
Meds for Lathrop. If you don't hear that, you don't get your meds. I missed the meds they gave me that they allowed me to take were metformin twice a day.
Uh-huh.
Of the Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, of the 5 mornings I was in, I missed 3 doses because I never heard her call at 5:30 in the morning. I'm usually up, but I can't hear. I didn't hear her because the kids kept me up all night.
Mm-hmm.
Made all the evening doses, but still, with missing that many doses of medications, my sugars started just going nuts. Of course, I shouldn't have to mention, it should be pretty obvious that you're not eating at a five-star restaurant when you're in jail. The food was almost edible.
Almost. Yeah.
It met the, I'm sure, basic nutritional allowance, but that was like just barely of what I ate. And I was scared to eat because my sugars were going up, and I didn't want to eat that much because that would just provide more fuel for the sugar to, you know, fuel for my body to turn into sugar
right.
in my blood and my urine. So, that's kind of jail in a nutshell. I was really nervous about talking to people. I did not want to say anything to anybody. I sat off on my own. You got my release. My bail hearing was on Wednesday. I had some cash on me when I went to jail. Not a lot. It was less than $100. But you can get through jail. You can buy commissary stuff. Except for commissary doesn't happen until Tuesday.
Oh, okay. So you couldn't buy any of that till Tuesday. Okay.
Right. What did I buy for commissary? I bought a deck of cards. So that I had something to occupy my mind other than what was going on. Folks, if you are ever in a defensive gun use situation, you're going to go to jail for at least for a little while. And, I will say this. If you have medical problems of any kind where you take normal medication, keep a list in your wallet. Even if you got a wife as beautiful and wonderful as I do, and she makes your meds up for you, and she just hands you the container and says, here, honey, here's your morning meds, here's your evening meds. That's what, and Susan packs them up for me in a container that I take on the road with me, and it's all marked with the days and morning and evening. And so I just, when it's time, when my phone goes off, I take my meds. But that's not going to do you a whole lot of good if they won't give you the meds that I didn't have. They were in the truck. But you need to have a list of the medications you take in your wallet or, ladies, in your purse. Have a list of what your doctor has prescribed. Have the number and fax number of your doctor and your pharmacy.
And your pharmacy, yeah, absolutely.
And if you get your meds from more than one pharmacy, have the numbers for both.
Good point. Good point. That's a great preparation lesson right there that I'll bet a lot of people listening right now don't have that, including me, and I'll be writing all that stuff down tomorrow and putting it in my wallet.
Yeah. I would have never thought of it. I obviously didn't think of it. I always thought if something happened to me, and the chances are if something happens to me, Susan's not going to be around because I am driving truck in probably several states away. In my wallet, there always has been a note, in case of emergency, contact Susan Lathrop with her phone number, and she is ICE1 in my Susan Lathrop in my phone.
Yeah, I've got a note like that as to who to contact as well, but a list of all my meds and doctor and pharmacy and all that, I don't have. I will have that soon.
Yeah. So, but I never thought that I would need it, and that's just one thing that stood out in my head. You know, if I would have been there a week instead of 4.5 days, it could have got to the point where they had to give me insulin, and that would have ruined my driving career. It's really hard. My understanding is, I'm not a doctor. It's really hard to get off insulin.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow, Paul, this has been just riveting. It really has. It's been riveting. And I give you the last word before signing off here. If there's anything else you want to cover, go.
The main thing I want to do is I want to thank a lot of people. First of all, and most important of all, is my wife, Susan. she knew better than me what I needed. And she went against my wishes and did what was best for me.
Yes, she did.
I want to thank you, Bob. You have been a fantastic friend from the almost the time I got out of jail until now. We've had many phone conversations, and you've been a very supportive and very good friend of mine.
My pleasure, Paul. My pleasure.
I need to thank Masada Yub and Gail Pepin. Of course, I need to thank everybody at ACLDN. I need to thank Masada Yub. I already said that. Kathy Jackson. Man, another person. Doesn't matter when, call. If you need something, call. Everybody who donated, everybody who sent messages, emails, texts, you don't know how much it means to somebody to know that people support you. Even I've got so many people now that I consider family, and as I said earlier, I've got blood that has turned their backs on me.
Yeah, that's terrible.
And I've got a whole lot more people than the people that have turned away that have become a part of my life. And in a weird, wild way, I guess it's kind of a blessing. Because I know where my family is.
You know, the old saying that says in times of adversity, you find out who your real friends are. That happened to you, didn't it?
It did. It very much did. So that's my story. I've been waiting 6 months and 10 days to tell it. I hope people can take enough information away from this so that A, it possibly doesn't happen to them, or B, if something does happen, that they're a little better prepared for the aftermath.
Yeah. Wow, Paul. Thank you so much. There's not enough thank yous that I can give you right now for coming on my show, for coming on my show first, telling the story, being public about it, educating people. I thank you. I thank you from the bottom of my heart. And you know, you're going to change lives because of this. I'll tell you that right now.
I hope so. I very, very much hope so. One last thing I want to say.
Sure.
ArmedCitizensNetwork.org. They're the ones I choose. They're the best people for me. They reached out. They helped me when they didn't have to. If you choose not to use ACLDN, please use somebody. Please. It'll save you so much heartache.
Yeah. And is it Armed Citizen? Let me go to it right now here.
I believe it's armedcitizensnetwork.org, and I'm trying to pull it up myself.
Yeah, you're right.
I'm doing a dangerous thing because my homepage, when I open my browser, is Facebook, and I've got all kinds of notifications.
Oh, you're right, Paul. ArmedCitizensNetwork.org. Well, Paul, thanks for your time. I appreciate it again. This is going to get released right away. We're recording. We're talking on Tuesday night. People can start hearing this tomorrow morning, Wednesday, the 24th of August. It'll release probably about 8 o'clock in the morning.
Thank you, Bob. Again, not just for being a friend, but for, I did not want to seem like I was, profiting from what happened to me.
Well, I don't think anybody would have thought that. And if they did, shame on them.
But thank you for providing the forum. Thank you for being a friend and just being a... I wanted you first, Bob, because I know no matter what, you're on my side. and you would help me get through it if I stumbled and mumbled like I obviously did. And but seriously, Bob, thank you. It's been my pleasure.
Well, mine too. Thank you. Well, ladies and gentlemen, you know, there's not much else I can say after this. So I am just going to say this. My name's Bob Main. I'm your host. This is another episode of the Handgun World podcast. Folks, shoot straight, shoot safe. Be good out there. Be safe. Have fun. Stick together. And I'll talk to you next time. Goodbye.